Welcome to NatureBet podcast, where we are speaking with investors and entrepreneurs about the green future. My name is Tarmo Virki, and today my guest is Heleri Pops from Practica Capital.
Welcome to NatureBet, Heleri.
Hello, thanks for having me.
What is Practica doing?
Happy to tell you about us a little bit. So we are a pan-Baltic fund, which means that this 80 million that we have the privilege of investing, we're investing only in the three Baltic countries, Estonia, Latvia and Lithuania. It's the third vintage of this fund. And very surprisingly, Practica only has one Estonian investment until today, which in my opinion is now very good that I am here in Estonia and we have Maria in Latvia as well. So finally, we are an actual pan-Baltic fund, not just a Baltic fund in Lithuania. We invest quite big tickets. We're able to do up to 3 million investments in the first round and then take it up to 8 million if we feel like it's a really good match. And since we have 80 million to invest, then I must say that we are not a nature-focused fund. We're not a green tech-focused fund. We don't really have the luxury of choosing this much. But I personally am very interested in this world, in this topic, and looking at the background of Practica and seeing the companies in the portfolio already and how a big part of it is green tech companies just makes me happy, because you see that even generalist funds are now seeing that green tech companies are doing really well and they're not just a charity, but they're actually a good investment.
How do you guys choose the companies to invest in?
That's quite a long process. It, of course, depends on the person that is doing the investment and their personal preferences as well. But it depends, first of all, of the team, how well the team clicks with our team, because it's a relationship of 10 years in the future, right? And then once this check is made, then we deep dive into the numbers. Since we're not a fund, that's the first money in. We don't invest into pre-seed companies. We don't take any technology risk. We expect the company already to know what they're doing and use our money to scale. Then I guess our due diligence is very number heavy as well. We do look at the metrics. We look at how the founder translates the metrics, even how the founder builds.
You said that the fund is not nature focused, even though a lot of green tech investments have been made. What's your passion for the nature? Where does it come from?
That's a good question. If I look at what I have done for work, then after leaving Pipedrive, I joined Ampler Bikes. So we were building electrical bicycles, and I think professionally, my appetite for anything connected to clean tech comes from there, because the mission there was very clear: less cars on the streets, more bikes and more people on the streets. And that probably took me down all those rabbit holes of why we need to walk for our health, why we need to ride bikes for the health of the planet, and so on. And from there on, I just have been attracted to those kinds of ideas much more, and those kinds of founders as well, because oftentimes I see that they are more passionate about what they're building and they don't just want to either get rich or just be a startup founder.
The electric vehicles business is, of course, not the greatest one these days, right?
Yes and no. I mean, in Estonia, we've had some troubles, of course, but I think there's light at the end of the tunnel, and I don't think the industry itself will disappear. Maybe some companies go, some companies come, but we will still need bicycles. And I definitely believe that that's where the world is headed, that people are seeing that we can't have that many cars, both for us, for our health, and for the health of the planet as well. So I don't think the industry itself is in trouble that much.
It was just the wrong time for the industry to scale, or just too many e-scooters on the roads of big cities during the boom years of 21 or 22.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you can call it the market adjustment as well. But in Estonia, even though Ampler Bikes now put the breads in the same cupboard with Go, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing either, because Ampler Bikes and the excellent bikes that they produce still exist and are just going stronger, I think.
Investing in green tech, you say that it's not investment for good or just investment for good. How do you see the balance between, is green tech investment just return on capital logic, or is there some other logic also?
Both are really important, in my opinion. I do believe that the founders that create these companies usually started for the vision that they have for the world, for the problems that they want to solve. But of course, the startups won't be anywhere without gaining any returns either, because you can create the best green tech company in your garage, but if nobody's there to see it or nobody understands what you're doing, then it doesn't matter. You have to grow, you have to earn money as well in order for your solution to work, to be seen and to be used by the masses. So I would say it's a 50-50 balance.
What are the kind of most known portfolio companies in Praktika's portfolio in the green tech field?
I would point out two of them. The first one is PVCase, and PVCase is creating software for wind turbines. And the second one, and since I've spent some time with the founder, then I must say one of my favorites is Heavy Finance, who is helping farmers go over to no-till farming with 0% loans. And I'm an investor there myself as well.
Where's the money in that equation? 0% loans, money comes from...
The money comes from selling the CO2 offsets that comes from moving over to no-till farming. So they're able to sell these quotas, give the money back to the investors, and seems like a win-win-win solution.
And the what's in it for the farmers?
The farmers can get new equipment and can go over to the no-till farming, which hopefully will get the better yield for them as well.
Looking at the bigger picture, 2024, from the investor perspective, how do you see the landscape today in the Baltic countries, as that this is your focus?
Promising, very promising. Of course, there are investors who weren't able to get their fund together, and it might be more difficult for them right now, because getting money from LPs is a bit difficult as well with today's markets. But we are in a very good position of having this money to invest. And I do think that there are companies to invest in as well. I'm a big fan of Lithuania right now. I think Lithuania is similar to what Estonia was maybe 5 years ago, or maybe a little bit more, that you have founders and builders who know what they're doing, and they have the ideas and the inspiration as well to build great things. But the same in Estonia. I think even though we're in a little bit of a situation where everything is new and the money isn't that easy to come by anymore, the stronger ones will definitely survive and come out of this stronger.
What about Latvia? They always seem to be the problem child of the free.
That's what they say, yes. I have big hopes for Latvia as well, and maybe there isn't like a good correlation between these two, but since they just opened their startup house and they are on the road to getting actually 3 new green tech funds, then I'm hoping that Latvia will shine as well. Maybe not this year, but in the upcoming years for sure.
If you would need to kind of compare Baltics, looking from Estonia, it looks a little bit weird combination anyway, but the kind of the Baltics across Baltics versus the rest of Europe, what makes the region stand out?
Definitely, it's smallness, which I think every one of us here sees as a benefit. So we are very close to the experts we have in these countries. It's very easy to make connections. It's really easy to try out new things, to test them here. And I think by now already, we also have very good connections on finding our way abroad. So once the founders test something here, they can easily already go to the US or go to the Scandinavian countries, whichever is better for the product that they're building. So I don't think anything has changed there. I think we're still to the ones who have been making business here, they still see us as a viable option, and looking from afar, then it is something exotic, something that has created a new kind of world, I think, coming from the history that we have.
You said that 2024 looks promising. For who? For the investors or for the startups, or
I think for both. It's going to need a lot of work. It's going to need a lot of effort, because money isn't that easy to come by at the moment. Investors are doing much more due diligence. It might take up to 6 months or a year to raise the round, but if all the chips fall into right places, then you have less competition. So that's another way to look at the situation right now.
How do you see the kind of impact of really slow exit market?
It has an impact for sure, but I think for the stages that we are investing in here, which is mostly pre-seed and seed, then we don't see it that directly. And maybe it comes in with a little bit of a lag, right? So if founders are just starting their first business, or maybe even getting the second money in, or maybe even going in the A round, I don't think that they're thinking about this that much. They are still operating based on the ambition and the blind vision, and that's a good thing.
It is totally a good thing, but I was more thinking about from the investor side. I think I was recently looking at the last year's exit data for Europe from PitchBook, and basically said that 2023 was the smallest number in 10 years, and that looked rather worrying to me. Maybe I'm just reading too much into this.
It might be worrying for sure, but I think it's just time for us, for the investors, to get creative as well, whether it's finding different kinds of exits, more mergers, more sales, or going to other geographies as well. I can't say in what's going to happen in the future. I must say that none of our companies have gotten this far either, so I don't have the personal experience. But what I do know for sure is that the market is not going to stop. It's not going to just end. You just have to be more diligent and more creative in the work that you do.
Absolutely. Good. Thanks, Hilary, for this chat.
Thank you so much.
Welcome to Ringside with Ray and Prince. My name is Ray Leonard Jr.
No, that's just my dad.
My name is Prince Daniels Jr.
Daniels again with a big home touchdown.
On this show, we come to humanize
athletes, entertainers, business executives. We're going to see what makes them tick.
Tuesdays, 10 a.m. Pacific time on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll see you there. Peace and power.
Electric acid.
Hey there, fabulous souls. I'm Stephanie Baklaan.
And I'm Eden Alpert.
And we're the hosts of the brand new podcast, Unapologetically Fab.
Get ready to join us on an amazing and real journey as we dive into life after 40 and own it.
We're all about changing the narrative, leaning into who you are, and living a life by your own design.
Join us as we embrace life unapologetically and redefine success.
This is Unapologetically Fab,
an Electric Cast production.
See you there.
Electric Cast.